So welcome into Satsang. So this is our fourth meeting. I'm going to start this one by telling you a story. It's a little story about stepping in it in such a way that you really can't get it off your shoes. So when I, the first direct encounter I had with the medicine wheel, with the teachings of the medicine wheel, I had a minor breakdown. It was an introductory class held in a friend's studio downtown. And as we settled in, I noticed there was a neatly folded red, black, and white Navajo blanket on the floor. And on that, there was this silver egg with a skull carved on it and some animal bones. And right then and there, I knew I was in trouble, that I was going to be hooped. I knew this blanket. I had felt it before. Now, earlier that morning, I had been lying in bed with my partner at the time, and I was telling him some thoughts and ideas that were coming into my head. As the course went on that day, the presenter was saying the same things. In his own way, slightly differently, but the same meanings. After a couple of hours of teachings and talking and a slideshow in which one of the slides was of a medicine wheel, Huicholi medicine wheel in Mexico, which he spoke of without naming the location or name of the wheel. So after a while, there was a break. And I was feeling pretty disoriented and dizzy. And as we sat on the floor, my partner turned to me and he said, "I can't believe he's saying the same things you said to me this morning." Well, my button went off. And I yelled at him quietly, "Well, believe it!" You know, snapping at him, practically biting his head off. Well, he left the room, and I sat crying. And I mustered up enough courage to go to the presenter. So with tears in my eyes, I don't even know what I said to him. I was just blubbering, I think. And he wrapped one arm of understanding around me and sat us both down on the floor. And he put his mouth to my ear, and he started speaking to me in Blackfoot. Now, I don't understand Blackfoot. I've never even heard it before. But I understood what he was saying, yet I couldn't repeat it back to him. I heard every word, but I couldn't tell you anything in this language what it was. So before we took this course, my partner and I had planned a six-week journey through South America and Mexico. So about 2 weeks later, he and I were standing on the top of a mountain in the deserts of Mexico, a mountain called Quemado, which means the scorched one. And we were in the very same medicine wheel that was in the slideshow. My partner wasn't, or didn't seem to be, so touched by the coincidence. But I was becoming more and more rattled. My behavior towards him began to deteriorate despite his best efforts to comfort me or just make sense of what I might be going through. And we parted company. So I spent the next month traveling alone through Panama and Peru with limited money, yet with this journey lead me to the grandmothers of the Kuna and then to my maestro, Don Juan, who I met. He was selling pipes in the street in Iquitos. And would he lead me over the coming years to my initiation? So I just wanted to open up tonight with a story and maybe open into some of the areas where you're feeling like you've stepped in it, what that feels like. maybe a little bit of the control buttons, you know, panic buttons that might be being pushed.
For me personally, it's a lot of frustration and anger right now. It comes up quite a bit. Yeah.
In what areas?
With my relationships, I think. My close relationships at the moment. Yeah, and just feeling I watch myself kind of get caught up in things, and that's very frustrating. So
You know, I was reading through the pieces that I sent to you this week, just to come into the same place you're at. And, you know, again, after editing many times, I see mistakes. And I said to you people that if you see a mistake, don't worry, they are being taken care of. But it's a good opportunity for you to experience seeing a mistake and not getting caught up in it. Not letting it take over the whole experience. You know, I've read a novel, like maybe Margaret Atwood or somebody, and there was like one typo in the entire novel. And that sometimes is the one thing I remember about the book. There was a mistake in it. You know, and the next time, oh, it's brilliant, right? Oh, yeah, that book had a typo, man, and it was like a published bestseller. So when frustration and anger come about, normally it is a sign that there is a mistake. And as you said, you get caught up in it. So there's been maybe an error in judgment, you know, a judgment call, or, you know, you said something you wish you hadn't. That's kind of a mistake. You know, just there's just a myriad of opportunities to step in it, basically. It's like being in the doggy park. You got to really watch where you're walking. Now, one of the best ways to come clean, and I've worked with a couple of you on this already, is to wrap up the relationship. That does not mean leaving your partner. Or your child, of course, or quitting your job. It means wrapping up the relationship, the ship you've been floating on with that person. And we've spoken about it in the pieces on past lives and on time, about gathering it all up between your hands and putting it in a bottle. And like a ship in a bottle, you look at that and you marvel at it. You're like, how did they make this ship in a bottle? Yeah? And then you get to like pick it up and look at it and go, oh my gosh, look at the deep, the sails are just in full, you know, tension with the wind, just in perfect relationship with the wind. And the look, there's little people on the deck and there's carvings on the bow and just like, wow, look at all the details that went into that. And then you put a cork in it and put it away. It's a lot easier than going back and trying to fix everything. In fact, there's nothing to fix. Everything just happens as it happens. Just start fresh. Start fresh. Of course, first one needs to let go of their addiction to being frustrated and angry. That's kind of the putting the cork on it part. So new beginnings are much more challenging than it sounds. Yeah, because it means letting go of everything you knew in that relationship. You needn't, push the restart button on the whole shebang. Just take it one step at a time. And then you get, practice, so to speak. Now, of course, when I say practice, it's a funny word. The time of practicing is really over. We've had 9 million years to figure out how to survive. It's time to move on. So it's time for the ones who are practicing to step up as the practitioners and pull up all your experience and transform your experiences into knowledge, which eventually will be transformed into increasing through increasing intelligence to wisdom. How does that sit with you? What I'm saying is you need to do this, not just listen to it. Yes, applied technology. Go ahead.
Forests have been popping up a lot too lately. Just my dream time.
What was that first word?
Forest, like being taken in the middle of a forest and just kind of
Oh
left there.
yes, forests. Okay, yeah. Oh yeah.
Partly because I'm crazy or something like that, and I've been left there to kind of die or something. So very, very vivid, and I don't know how that applies to
Well,
this side of things, but.
do you remember in our meditations, possibly one that you sat in, the character Chaluchaski? Yes, okay. We will speak to him or of him in the coming lessons more. But he is the club-footed familiar of the jungle. Pan is a similar character. You know Pan and the guy with the half goat and pan pipes? Yeah, same idea, it's like leading the rats into the jungle, but with Chaluchaski, he is said to steal the children from their villages and that they never return. But what is more likely is that they return so changed they are not recognized. And he takes you into the forest of your mind and shows you around. And that is exactly where we are on this journey. We're in the second act now. You've crossed the threshold. You've gone in. There's no turning back now because you don't know how to get back. You're lost in the forest with the, and you must trust this familiar. So, like Little Mouse was challenged by the frog. And he failed. And when he failed, he got angry with the frog. And the frog said, "Do not let your fear and anger blind you. Tell me, what did you see? What do you see when you go in the forest?"
Is that a direct question right now?
Yes, please.
Okay. Okay.
Good question.
I've been in a war bunker where the door's been closed on me and I've been stuck inside and I've had lots of things like food and other things. I've seen, just last night, it was a huge spider who did this web. It was like in this town, in this forest town, and I got caught up in the web. Yeah. The other night it was I was taken in the middle of the forest and but into a house. And each time I was led by like some sort of male character. Yeah. The house was a trick. It was a trick to make me feel safe and comfortable. But then he was kind of like, yeah, well, I'm leaving you here now. And yeah, so and I was having a fit. I was having a fit about it. I was like, what do you mean? And I was taken away from my partner and my son and my family. So,
So as you're saying, all these things are familiars. I mean, you would not have followed this person if you didn't, if there was some, if there was, if he was a complete stranger, right? There was something about him that was familiar, and the house was familiar. This is a very natural way for the teachings to come. You know, I kind of describe it as sometimes it comes in a little opposite way, like a carrot dangling in front of your face. And then they like, you got to negotiate it or something, right? And then just as you go for it, whoop, gets pulled away. And you got to renegotiate. So it's like, oh, I want this. And then they go, okay, well, we'll give you that. But you got to do this first. And then you do that. And they go, ah, we're just kidding. We're not going to give you any money. So, you know, there's a lot of coyote. So you're experiencing the coyote energy, but it's coming to you through a filter of your fear. Yeah. Of being trapped and put on the spot, being hooped, stepping in it. You know, nothing worse than having toilet paper dragging behind your foot when you come out of the bathroom, right? So let's go into an exercise about fear. Sometimes in the meditations, I ask people, what are your top three fears? What are the three hoops that, you know, catch you the most? For today, just consider, and you don't need to say it out loud, what are you afraid of? What is your fear? Just whatever comes to you, just have it in your mind right now. So let it come with a name. Feel it, know it, be familiar with it. Because fear is also your familiar. You're very familiar with your fear, no doubt. Now let that fear take you into the story of Jumping Mouse. See yourself in that story. You'll land somewhere in that story. Now get up on your feet and stand upright and dignified and have a good look around. And ask yourself, what am I afraid of? And then tell me, what do you see? Anybody can speak up here. It's an open floor.
See a vast expanse all around me.
Yeah. The vast expanse, just to, yes. And how does that feel from the place that you are standing? When you look out across that vast expanse.
Free.
Thank you, fear. Fine, dude. Yeah. Fear's the best shapeshifter there is. Yeah. Anybody else like to just ch share where they landed? Share.
Well, I saw, I don't think this was the jumping mouse story, but the story of the young person who stole something. And she stole a bundle or something and then had to come back to her, to the medicine woman about it. Anyway, my fear is of people attacking me for taking what is mine.
Okay. So, yeah, so that was the story of Waconseye. Yeah, the great medicine woman. And so your fear is of people giving you a heck for taking what's yours. Is that what you said?
Yeah, like starting a fight, encountering a fight because I've taken what's mine.
You want to elaborate on it? Can you give me an example? Like,
Well,
what
this
part of the
was just.
story? What part of the story were you in with Vacancier?
Well, I don't know that story very well, but I had the bundle in my hands,
Ah.
and I was walking back into the village to speak directly to the place and the person from whom I had supposedly taken it. And my fear was that people would come flying in on all sides to take me down.
Because you were owning up. She stole the
Because
shield.
I had power, because I was carrying something powerful that they wanted.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a tricky one to wrap up.
I know, it's a complicated one.
Yeah.
It's just what I saw.
No, it's good. It's good. Do you want to explore it?
Sure.
Okay. So I'll just elaborate the story again, clarify the story, and that might help us clarify this a bit. So Waconseye was a young woman, around 12 years old, and she was getting really bored of village life. She didn't really want to be there. She thought there was bigger and better things in the world. So she was like, hatching a plan to escape, and the medicine shield of the medicine lodge caught her eye, and she thought, oh, that must be worth 10 horses. And she stole it and took it to the local trader, who said, well, yeah, it might be worth 10 horses, but come back tomorrow and I'll let you know. So she did. And there stood the trader with the reins of 10 horses in his hand. And her heart was beating in her chest. And she was just like, wow, my God, freedom! Freedom is so close. And she reached out for the reins, but then she stopped. And she said to the trader, she said, how did you know? How did you know the shield was worth 10 horses? And he said, well, I took it to the only one who would know, the medicine woman. Yeah. So in that moment, Waconseye was hooped, right? She'd been caught red-handed. And then she turned her back on the horses and ran back to the village. And there was the medicine shield hanging outside of the lodge, which meant the medicine woman was in. And the medicine woman came out, and Waconseye, tried to make amends. I'm sorry, I did a bad thing. And so I'm going to leave now. I'm going to banish myself from the village. And the medicine woman said, not so fast, my dear. You stole the shield. Your name is Waconseye. It means she who steals shields. And the medicine woman took Waconsie into the medicine lodge, kicking and screaming. She did not want to be the next medicine woman. She wanted to get the hell out of there. But medicine woman she became, and she went on to be one of the most famous medicine people, well-loved, which is the same as famous, and effective healers of that time. So where do you land in that?
Well, that's just summed up my life story. The short version is I chose spiritual development in a terrible initiation, left my village, and have pursued that path ever since. I left behind status, money, whatever we call all of that, cultural normalcy. And there's something going on now where that's there's some kind of fork in the road about that right now. I want to run back in the village. I want to run back to the cultural normalcy. I'm wanting to, you know, go back. I don't want to keep going on my path as a healer. Mm-hmm. I just want to retire and kick back. I'm tired of this healing crap.
You know, what you're speaking to actually is, and I hope you take this well, a very extended adolescence. The adolescence, and I just mean that in terms of years, which actually doesn't really mean anything. You know, you've been around a little while, yeah? Like me. I was 44 when I stepped into my place of adult. So no spring chicken myself. But you have come around on your own to see that you're done wandering. There's that saying, I've seen bumper stickers, you know, just because I'm wandering doesn't mean I'm lost. Well, that's fine if you're an adolescent, a true adolescent in that stage, appropriately. But if you have overstayed your welcome in that place, you are indeed lost. You're lost in space and you will feel it, right? You will be like, I need to get home. I need to come back to normalcy, to my authenticity, my desire, my path, everything that drove you out in the first place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you might have been throwing off stuff from, you know, the embraces of childhood. Yeah. Like throwing off the reins, right? Mm-hmm. And the bridles and the whole thing and running free for a while. And, you know, basically you're getting bored of it. Mm-hmm. And that's a good indicator. It's time to come home. Time to come to the place of the adult and just settle down and get to the heart of your work. You know, you've gathered so much knowledge and experience. I know from the book that you've written. I mean, it's just thick with your experiences. Yeah? Yeah. In technical terms, right? So also bring in, I haven't read it all, of course. I've only really looked through it a bit, but just to flesh it out, you know, with your personal experiences as well. Sure. And that will add such depth to it. Such depth. Sure. It's just a fantastic piece of information right now. But you know, like there's an equation, information plus experience equals knowledge. So if you really want to convey knowledge, you got to put the experience piece in there. And then that will ripen through fruition into wisdom in the people who read it. They will then add their experiences to the knowledge you've passed on to them. You know, it's like value added intelligence. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're ready to do it. You're ready to settle down and hunker down and get her done. Yeah?
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And so, I see now the fear part. Yeah. Who am I to do this? Does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So here we are in the Marianne Williamson quote, right? Just about step into the light of yourself. That comes first before you get on stage.
Yeah.
So you're just stepping into your brilliance, into your own brilliance. And we are our worst critic. Yes? You know, you are both characters in your story, the fear. You are the one who, how did you put it? It's what's truly yours, your authenticity. And you are the one telling yourself, who are you to be that person?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good, 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 good. So, you know, get over it.
Yeah.
You know, like the stop it video, right? Stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop it. But my horoscope. No, we don't go there. Oh, but my childhood. No, we don't go there. But society says, no, we don't go. Beautiful. Now that puts some good wind in your sails, I think. I can feel it.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I can see the little ship in the bottle. It's just flying out the door.
Yeah. The ancestors say, be a good wind. Just be a good wind. Let things pass on through in a good way.
Yeah.
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 That will be a funny one when we come to the subconscious lessons, where we discuss how the ancestors are living in our colon. What the implications of being a good wind is from that. Oh, the power of methane.
I just read an article that apparently the roof of a barn got blown off somewhere from all the methane of the cows.
Wowie. Well, that must be a fantastic wind.
Yeah. I don't know if fantastic is the right word. I'm not too
incredible.
Sure.
Yeah. That's a good word. Well. Well, indeed, we are blowing off the roof here, aren't we? Yeah. And we're starting to touch the sky through the purple haze. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Nice. So we've got about 15 minutes left. We started a bit late. We can go over, but let's just see what else is ripe for the picking, eh, tonight.
I feel pretty ripe myself here. I've been doing a real dance with fear the last week or so, and really, I went into the notes a little bit right before a call and was reading about this phase and the vision quest and really feeling like I'm there in the middle of the wilderness and really facing a lot of fear. Fear, and it's many faces, so many faces. And also really, I feel like I'm gaining so much through this experience of just like I've really come to a place where I can only surrender to the mystery and face my fear. And there's been so many teachings that have come out of that, and Yeah, it's just incredible. It's like on one hand, the one of the most scary, sad experiences I've been through, and or I'm in the middle of, and on the other hand, one of the richest experiences I've ever been through. And yeah, it's really opening me in a lot of ways.
Well, are you done for now? Okay. You're speaking so eloquently to the nature of this quest, about the teachings come to you to bring forth the teachings in you. So as I was saying earlier about this kind of value added of, information plus experience equals knowledge plus experience equals, we'll call it increasing intelligence plus experience, equals wisdom. And then it kind of loops all the way back around again. And, as the medicine wheel teachings is share wisdom elder, share wisdom elder. And at that point, the wisdom actually just sort of comes out of your pores like sweat, which is also why elders do sweat lodges a lot, because they just share wisdom so easily that way. But we're in the earlier stages of that. We're not in the elder here. We're just working through adolescence to adulthood. And in Act One, we saw the mask. We kind of addressed the mask, the reality bubbles, perception. And now we're coming to the face. I mean, as we were just speaking of, who am I to be this? As the mask is removed, you see your face for the first time. And sometimes that face looks like fear because it's not familiar to you. And it is. Just like that blanket on the floor, I had never laid eyes on it before, but I knew it. I recognized something in it that was familiar to me. And so, just that, not even looking at yourself in the mirror, just put your hands on your face right now, even just, wow. I had a journey with DMT once where I went really far, like, too far. And so I know how far is too far now. It's a good thing. But when I came back, I put my hands on my face. I remember doing that, both hands just running them down my cheeks, and it was like nothing I had ever felt before. Just get to know this face of yours, not, that's under the mask. And then as we go along through to Act Three, you will start to uncover the being behind the face. And you will also learn about shape shifting. And a really important part of shape shifting is to remember to retract claws and beak when you're coming back to what you might call the normal world. You don't want to come back with like big wolf ears or a tail, because people look at you really funny. Yeah. So that also kind of applies to the experience you're having with this place of really letting go, eh? Mm-hmm. Of surrender, as you said. And so we be in that place and we fully experience it, just as we might fully experience the energy of a wolf in a shapeshifter. And then when you come back from it, just remember to put everything back in place. Yeah? Does that make sense? Grieving is a necessary thing. But it does also have its appropriate time in order for the next thing to arrive. Yeah. But it's just something to consider. And so maybe an example like anger would be a better one. You know, just something like you're really pissed off at somebody and you lashed out and you showed your claws and you know, bared your teeth. And if it was a mistake, it was a mistake. And we already talked about not letting yourself get caught up in the mistakes. But either way, whether it was a right action or a reaction, remember to put yourself back together again before you address another single thing. Otherwise, you will turn upon that thing, you know, with whiskers or something, or like I said, your ears are still sticking out, or your claws. And for a child, that's really scary. And it happens a lot for kids. You know, their parents have their attention on one thing, they've shape-shifted into something, and then they turn to the child trying to get their attention, and they still are that being. And children can see that. You know, that happened to me with my daughter. She actually, out of frustration, said, "You are changing all the time. I don't know who you are anymore." And that really hit home for me. It made me smarten up and get my shit together. I'm not suggesting that's what you're doing. It just sort of came through. The teachings came out that way. But it's good to remember when you do get home. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if we have disagreements with our partners and there's a child around, and, you know, be respectful of the child, because they come first.
I had a fear come up of my life. Well, the idea was like sort of my life draining away into other people's needs, and the different demands on me. And then in the Jumping Most story, I was just a kind of aloft, and I realized I was the eagle at the end. And even though my fear had, I'd been like, you know, sort of in the village part of the story where, you know, like the, it seemed as if kind of the village was draining me away or something, but then in this story, it was like I was on the back of the eagle. I was jumping most on the back of the eagle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let's just recapitulate that a little bit. So the fear is of the village your obligations, that be a right word, to the village are draining you?
Yeah, or just that I'm kind of running out of energy. And before I live my own life, I'm sort of living everybody else's.
Yes, yes, yes.
Life and needs and everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is another aspect of the shapeshifter that one must master. And sometimes it comes under the guise of pleasing others. That it can get quite complex because within that, you create an environment where people want to please you. It's kind of a strange, like, paradox, almost parasitic situation. So we, you know, as I said, we create our own realities, the Kahuna teaching, yeah, that there are basically two tasks we have. One is to create our own reality, and the other is to be the being who lives in it. So that's really what we're speaking to here. You created a reality of being somebody who, you know, gets the job done, who's there when you need them, who's, you know, a healer, a good partner, a devoted partner, you know, and all these kinds of things. Now the challenge is to be the person in that reality that you yourself have created. Yes? But it also is a beautiful teaching because it's like switching places with the jumping mouse story, right? It's like role reversal, which we will be talking about more in upcoming lessons. Here's the world I created. Oh, look, here's me standing inside of it, looking back at it going, uh-oh. Now what have I done? You know, I'm hooped. There we are again, right? You hoop yourself with your own reality. And then you go, what's wrong? That's all that's there. Now, you know, the basket weaver or the artisan always leaves a mistake in their work. It is the mistake that is your way out of your own creation. So here we come again, full circle into the mistakes, yes? And that was a piece you had to read for last week on mistakes. The oops of the hoop. When you hoop yourself, just bless yourself with oops and shift it. It will only come from you because you create your own reality. And when you think of it, isn't it a generous world? Everybody does what you tell them to. How's that for control? Yep. Very good. Very good. Thanks for bringing those teachings through, everybody, tonight. You know, you, like I said, this is a value-added exploration. Every time we, you know, we take another shovelful out of the well, we discover something new. And it takes courage to do that, and strength. You know, it takes strength to shovel out a well, dig out a well. So just want to honor you all for having that strength and stepping up and doing the work for the wishing well. Is there anything else that might want to come up? I think you've each spoken tonight, but
there's something else that's been kind of niggling on my mind. Just an image that came up from the forest. It was a temple, and I don't know much about statues, but this one became alive, mm-hmm. and it was when you were talking about shape-shifting mm-hmm. that it came up to me, and it was familiar, but it was intriguing, but it was supposed to be scary, but I wasn't that scared. And its face was shifting and it was showing me its teeth, and I was kind of smiling, it was kind of real, but it kept changing. And it was protecting this doorway, this temple or this place that no one else wanted to go in.
Listen, I'm just going to touch in because we have been working together for a bit. You have a very vivid imagination.
Yeah,
your imagination's really quick to put images to words.
Yeah.
And it can be a little blinding. It can blindside you from actually listening. You get so involved in what you're seeing that you're way off on another track.
Uh-huh.
One thing's being said and you're off somewhere else. And yes, it is very relative to the conversation of shape shifting. It's also relative to discipline and, you know, the discipline of retracting teeth and that, you know?
Okay.
So imagination is as confused as anything right now. You know, we've been talking about how the entities and they're all coming to know themselves as well, the emotions and thought bubbles and reality bubbles, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything's happening at the same time. This great, great cleanup that's going on of putting all things in right place. When, you know, getting all things together. They say, until the world comes back together again, there will be great confusion and frustration. But we also, we must go through the worst first in order to get to the best. So as the Hopi say, prepare for the worst, expect for the best. It's kind of linear because the worst will come first. And the best comes next. And it will, it's a continuum as well, yes? But it's just kind of the way things are. So back to the imagination. In coming lessons, we will talk much more about intuition, imagination, the ancestors, and their homes. Imagination was displaced as well into the colon. It's not its natural habitat. So it's not doing very well. Yeah, it's kind of like being in a cage, and I sense in you that you really don't like that. And your imagination is biting, chomping at the bit, going, you know, I know my salvation is near. I want it now, and it comes flowing out of the cracks in the cage, right? And it's like this. Let's just, okay, let's go with your flow here. Okay, what I'm seeing is it's like this monster with a million tentacles, and it's all these tentacles are coming out of the cage, right? Just like, I want to be heard. I want to be heard. I want to be seen. And rightfully so, because, you know, when the imagination gets home, oh my gosh, yeah? But it's being a little pushy right now for you. So you're going to have to tame it a little bit. Because it's taken you off track. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got crickets going off here. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, it's not to squelch creativity or anything, but it's, imagination's taking up a lot of your time.
Dream time.
You weren't just dreaming now, were you? When you said about you were in satsang, a place of exploration, and you were exploring, undoubtedly. And you came to a rock or a log in the well. That taken out, you know, we take that rock out and maybe we'll build a wall with it or we'll carve a beautiful sculpture out of it. But it's just not in the right place for those who are digging a well.
Okay. So some
discipline. When you go into the visuals, you know, it's kind of like you're on an LSD trip all the time.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar? Yeah, people like that, right? I mean, some people, that's fun. But you got to come back. You got to come back. It's exhausting on your body. to be in your imagination all the time. Yeah. It's kind of like being in a plane all the time. You know, when you ride in a plane, like your organs get compressed and you get dehydrated and you know what I mean? It's like just, if you're in that environment, all it's okay, a couple hours, okay, you got a 24-hour flight, you know, you can manage it, but it's not your home.
I've actually heard that as one of the definitions of adolescence is that adolescents are on LSD 24/7.
There you go. There you go. Okay. But then, as in your case, you know, you're like, I'm tired of taking LSD. I'm up for some, you know, meatloaf. I don't know. Good. So yeah, you know, in terms of the imagination part, you're just getting yourself in right place. It's all perfect. You know, perfection comes in increments. There's no other way for it to come. So you're doing great. You're here. You're taking your rights on your Saturn return. That's huge. You know, you're showing the way. You really are showing the way. Those of us, me, I was 44. Yeah, and nothing wrong with that. But it's just, you know, we don't have as much time as we used to. Time is compressing. That's what happens when poles shift. We know the sun, the poles shift. The dream speeds up and time expands, which actually makes it kind of disorienting, but also makes it shorter in a strange way. Hence the disorientation, I guess. Yeah, so we just don't have the span of time we used to get things done. So again, I want to honor you for stepping up in your Saturn return, because that is the appropriate time to begin the journey towards adult. It's not going to happen overnight, but you have, you know, stepped out of the place of the darkness, which is the West. You know, it's a place of checking out, basically. Checking out of the world, but also checking out new things, yeah? Uh-huh. And so you're just going to finish up there in your time and, you know, step right up when you're ready, folks. Keeping in mind, there is only one day. And that is the state of being aware. All right. Very good. I think that's good for tonight, eh? And so we'll see you next Sunday. If you want to book any sessions, just let me know. And I wish you all well.